Hello and welcome to the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. Matt Moore is still in Utah, but the Rockets might be close to a deal to acquire him for cash. I'm James Herbert. With me is Chris Barnwall, and we have nothing to talk about today at all.
Nothing's happening at all. Like, just really, really boring 3 days before free agency.
I just wish there was some content for us to discuss. It just makes no sense.
I thought the NBA offseason was supposed to be fun, but just like the playoffs, it's just a boring, expected, like, droll.
Okay, realistically, I thought we'd be spending some of this podcast talking about the NBA awards, but I don't even think that matters at all anymore. So we can just start right here. Chris Paul is a member of the Houston Rockets, or by the time you're listening to this, it will probably be official. Right now, it is not. But the trade is reportedly done. Yes, a trade. He didn't wait until free agency to go to Houston. He flexed his muscles. He got the Clippers to trade him so he can get his enormous supermax contract from the Houston Rockets. And in exchange for him, the Clippers get Pat Beverly. They get Montrezl Harrell, apparently a late reported addition to this deal. They get Sam Decker. They get Lou Williams. And they'll probably get a bunch of other unguaranteed contracts that they'll waive. So where do we even start? Is Chris Paul a genius for this? Is this Rockets team going to give him a better chance at winning a title than he ever would have had in Los Angeles?
I mean, they probably give him a better chance than he had in Los Angeles just because it looks like where the Clippers are going, they kind of got stuck. Like, they didn't really, they could have ran it back and see where they were going, but just, we all kind of knew that what we saw the last, like, they were a second round ceiling team. Like, maybe they make the conference finals if they got lucky, but they kept their head in the ceiling and they hit their head in the ceiling again and they really couldn't do anything else to improve. So I think Chris Paul kind of saw the writing on the wall there and was like, you know, I need a change of scenery. I think he's a genius for getting himself traded by telling the Clippers, I'm going to sign with the Rockets in free agency. You should probably just trade me there so you can get something for me, because then he gets the money he wants and the Clippers get assets. And in my opinion, like, if Blake Griffin decides to re-sign with the Clippers, like, after his free agency period, that team's still not terrible. Like, it's going to take them a while to build up something, but they can still compete.
Okay, so I want to stick on the Rockets side for a little bit. We'll get to the Clippers. I think, yeah, if they keep everybody, it sounds like they won't keep Redick, but if they keep Griffin and they keep all the guys they got in this deal, I think that could still be a playoff team. But from Houston's perspective, they gave up a bunch of good assets. Like, none of these guys are stars, but Patrick Beverley's on an awesome contract. Lou Williams on a $7 million expiring contract, which, considering how good he was last year, that's a bargain that has value on the trade market. I think they really loved Sam Decker, and he still had 2 years left on his rookie contract. It's not like they just gave up chump change for Chris Paul. Like, this is a guy they thought they were going to get in free agency. Mind you, they would have had to clear significant salary to get him anyway, so some of these pieces probably would have been gone. But it's not like they just stole him. Like, to me, they gave up pretty significant players. I think they still did really well to add a guy of his caliber, but it's interesting that they gave up a bunch of guys who were going to be in their rotation plus a first round pick here.
Yeah, I agree completely, because I think that the players they gave up, I want to say they were essential to what they were doing. Like, all those players, their production is replaceable, in my opinion, in a Mike D'Antoni system. Like, I think Lou Williams is replaceable. I think Patrick Beverley, when you had Chris Paul, is very replaceable.
Yes.
Sam Decker he's a fine player, but he's replaceable. So all that's replaceable. But at the same time, it's not like you just gave up players that weren't playing. You weren't giving up end-of-the-bench guys. You weren't giving up that one player that fit weird. Like, all those guys were pretty good fits. Like, they traded for Lou Williams at the middle of the season last year, and he came in and almost stole Eric Gordon's Sixth Man of the Year award away. So, like, they didn't just give up players that they weren't using. I think they can replace them, but they definitely gave up, like, they're going to change that roster a lot, and possibly the system. I don't know how much the system's going to change, but they're going to have to make a lot of changes to really compete.
And they effectively traded two first round picks here, because Lou Williams was this year's first round pick for them, and then they're trading next year's first round pick. Now, maybe that doesn't matter because they would have been late first round picks anyway, and since they have James Harden on the roster, it's all about competing now. But Houston has historically been able to grab guys like, say, Montrezl Harrell and Sam Decker in the draft that have ended up being rotation players for them. So I think there is a real cost there. But, I mean, now they have Chris Paul and James Harden on the same team, and I'm really curious to see how it works. I think D'Antoni's system is so different than anything that Chris Paul has ever done in the NBA before. I'm interested to see who kind of bends there. Chris Paul is obviously smart enough to play in any system. He's smart enough to figure out how to play with James Harden. But whenever we've seen somebody else come into this Rockets team and take more of a ball handling role, whether it's Ty Lawson or Jeremy Lin, it hasn't been great for Harden. It hasn't been great for the team. Now, this is a completely different situation because Chris Paul is so much better and he's a great shooter. So having him off the ball is fine. I'm just interested to see how they end up figuring it out, like, together, if they can make each other better, if the system will change at all, if Chris Paul will start shooting mid-range jumpers in Houston the way nobody has done the past few years. I think he will. And I think that will be a significant change for the team, but I think that's a good thing. I think all the justification you really need for this deal is to look at what happened against the Spurs. The Spurs played them for layups and threes and surrendered everything else, and all of a sudden the Rockets looked really predictable, and James Harden had this huge scoring load, and when he was unable to do it, then the team just collapsed. And now, if you just put Chris Paul on the floor at the same time, they're a completely different team. And the one amazing advantage that they'll have over everybody else in the league is that for 48 minutes every night, assuming D'Antoni staggers them, they will have one of the top playmakers in the NBA on the floor. To me, there's no reason to ever have both of them sitting at the same time, because you want Harden to be essentially your backup point guard now as well as the starting shooting guard after what you saw from him last year. So that's just incredible. And you look at their offensive rating last season, it was one of the best in NBA history. It was second to the Warriors last year. And you're like, well, how can they get any better? Well, the one way to get a little bit better from that, I don't know if it'll actually come to bear in the numbers, but the one way to do that is to make your bench even better, because suddenly you don't have those minutes where Patrick Beverley or Eric Gordon is the main creator.
Right. Now you have James Harden throwing out kicks to Ryan Anderson. You have Chris Paul throwing out kicks to Ryan Anderson. And I really like that you mentioned how the system, we're not really sure how much this is going to change. If there is a concern I have for this, it's that D'Antoni has that kind of personality that we've seen in the past, doesn't really work well if it goes against what he wants to do. We saw it in New York. We saw it in Los Angeles. D'Antoni wants to run what he wants to run. And Chris Paul is such a micromanager that I could see that possibly not working out well. I like to believe that Chris Paul is enough of a competitor and enough of a good team guy to where he'll go, you know, yeah, I'll run for you because I want to win games. And we obviously saw how much that worked last year.
Yeah.
But I really want to see end of game, close game situation. Chris Paul wants to run the offense because that's what he does. He wants the ball in his hands. He wants to micromanage everything. Is he willing to do that? Or is he willing to run what D'Antoni wants to run? Or is he going to do what he usually does, which is goes, no, I'm going to set up a pick and roll instead of the best play that I believe is going to win.
Right. And that's so interesting, because when he went to the Clippers, he changed that entire Clippers organization. That was a team that needed somebody to do that. But he came in, he brought a PR guy, that worked for New Orleans along with him. He changed sort of the way the team functioned behind the scenes and sort of took control of organizing team functions and dinners. And suddenly there was much more of an emphasis on taking care of the players' families and all this stuff. There was a great feature by Lee Jenkins a few years ago that kind of detailed all this. And I think he had significant power within that organization, on and off the court as a leader, as the number one guy. And it could not be any more different now. I mean, he's going to a team that has an established superstar, an established style of play, an established system, an established culture. And it's not just on the court. On the court is where we're going to see it, right? Because he generally is the guy that is making the vast majority of the plays. Yes, he's a good off-ball player, and you've seen it when they had Chris Paul initiate some offense in Los Angeles. He can obviously space the floor, but he's generally the guy that is in charge, and especially important situations. But also off the court, he was the guy that kind of ran that locker room and ran that team. And this is just, it's a different step for him. I really wonder how the personalities will mesh. He has a very different personality than, say, the lighthearted Mike D'Antoni, who's just making jokes all the time.
Or the party animal James Harden.
Right? But I think he's insanely competitive. He is so driven. He has, there's goals that he wants to reach in the NBA in terms of getting to the conference finals, getting to the finals, winning a championship that he's yet been able to do. And you could tell that things just kind of got stale in Los Angeles. And this is a chance for him to do something new. But I think he will have to bend a little as well. And I think it's not like the Rockets are all of a sudden going to slow things down. So I'm curious to see how the hell it works. I think the one thing that's really interesting is that Harden and Paul together wanted to get this done. This isn't the kind of thing where Morey just went out and made this move and said, we're going to convince Paul to play our style. Like, he's bought in. He went to the Clippers and said he wanted to go there. He has been talking to James Harden about this, and they wanted to team up. And I think when you start there, it's a little bit like with the Warriors and Durant last year. Like, they were all going to do whatever they could to make this work. There wasn't going to be a clash of egos. And I think there's the potential for there to be some, like, push and pull in terms of how the offense works, but I don't think there's going to be any sort of ego problem here.
I wouldn't think so, unless it goes wrong. That's not where I could see egos getting into becoming a problem, where because the Warriors, it was never really an issue because they were so good, even without Durant, that, like, just adding Durant made it a little easier to be like, we're going to win games no matter what, so we're never going to have those ego issues. When losing comes into effect, then egos kind of like flare up, because I could see a situation where Chris Paul and Harden, they're not meshing the way you think it is, D'Antoni's system isn't working, then all of a sudden you have the situation where they've lost 7 straight in March when they're supposed to be like peaking for the playoffs, and you start hearing, it starts getting a little snippy.
Yeah,
I don't think that's gonna happen, but like that's a situation where I could see it happening where egos are gonna get involved, which I guess that's worst case scenario, but I think it's worth like mentioning.
You're saying Chris Paul might be difficult to deal with when things aren't going perfectly.
Yeah, I know, hard to believe, right? A competitor like him.
Yeah. Okay, so how about the other side? I love that they got Beverly, and
I love everything about the Clippers returning. If they were gonna lose them.
I mean, if you start there, and that's like, I graded the trade today, and it's hard to figure out, like, the proper context in which to assess this, right? Because if you're saying, well, keeping Chris Paul would have been an A+, so obviously losing him, like, the most you can give it is, like, a B. Like, that's sort of where I went, but also I thought, like, given the situation, given that he just told them, hey, I'm leaving. Like, the fact that they were able to pull this off, where they got multiple good players and movable players and a pick, they could have just lost him for nothing. Like, I give the Clippers a lot of credit for that. So, I think, yeah, ideally, you keep him, you see if you can make some other changes and make this team feel fresh next year. But given what happened, given that they couldn't convince him to stay, I think this is about the best possible outcome. I don't see a world where they get a better return given the lack of leverage that they had.
Right. They had no leverage. They had the only team they could trade with was Houston.
Yep.
And they basically decided, okay, we have two options here. We can either go for assets and completely blow it up and let Blake Griffin walk because we know JJ Redick's going to leave. Mm-hmm. Or we can create a potential scenario where if Blake Griffin stays, we can still potentially be a playoff team because Patrick Beverley, Sam Decker, I always mess up saying his first name.
Montrezl
Harrell. Yes, thank you. And,
not a lot of silent L's at the end of names. There's not a lot of those out there.
Like, this is a very good team. Like, they're not gonna win it. They're not gonna be competing for a title. They're not gonna be challenging the Warriors. But they're gonna be competing for the playoffs, especially with how bad the bottom of the West was last year. Like, this team's as good as the Thunder were. Like, and we saw Blake Griffin, when you put the ball in his hands, he's pretty good. So I think that this could be a situation where if Blake Griffin decides to stay, they kind of be like, okay, it's your team now. And he could thrive. He could become an offensive monster.
And he could become the point forward, right?
Yeah, which we've seen him do before. We've seen him do some creation out of the high post. So this isn't a crazy scenario where this isn't really them deciding, okay, we're going to blow it up. It's them deciding, okay, we're giving the keys to Blake Griffin after Chris Paul's ran the show for so long.
And if Blake leaves, then they have the ability to blow it up and actually get decent assets, right?
Right, because like people are going to want Patrick Beverley. People are going to want Lou Williams.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean you're going to get, like, future stars, but you can get picks. You can get assets that can be used down the line. You can actually have some flexibility with which the Clippers front office hasn't had in years. So that's the thing I like about it, is like they might actually have a little bit of depth if they can keep Griffin, and if they don't, well, they're in a better position to blow it up than just watching everybody walk and starting from nothing. So I like it. I actually now would be like, in a weird way, even though they'd be worse, I'd be more interested in the Clippers next year if they keep Griffin, because it's something new at least. And I'd like to see what Griffin could be as the undisputed number one playmaker. So that would be really cool. I'd like to see Griffin stay. There's obviously going to be many more rumors about Griffin. We don't know where he'll go. But their future is at least fascinating now. And again, like I was shocked at every part of this. I was shocked when it said Chris Paul was traded. Because we all thought he was just going to make a decision in free agency. And then when I saw the return, I was even more shocked because the Clippers didn't do badly.
Right. And we kind of had made a joke out of making fun of Doc Rivers as the GM for a while now. I think a lot of people credit this to Jerry West over Doc. And I think I saw a couple people said, oh no, the Clippers traded their coach away. So obviously Doc Rivers' reputation is not great around the NBA Twitterdom right now, but I am, like, with you, really excited about the Clippers' future, because, especially if they keep Griffin, because, like you said, it's something new, and we just kind of all got tired of, I was always in the camp of, no, run it back, I know it's boring, but, like, maybe you can become, like, the Mavericks, where they had Dirk, and, like, you know, they kept the same core, kept Dirk around forever, and eventually their window came through, and they won a title, but that is a boring way to go about it, and in a world where it looks like the Warriors are going to be competing for titles for the next 5 years, you really can't do that. So I'm okay with them I'm really excited and okay with them being like, you know what, no, let's change it up. Let's give the keys to Blake Griffin, if that's what they're going to do.
What do you think about Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford, and Lou Williams being on the same team?
I want them to play at the same time. Just throw out five basketballs at once and say, and make them fight over it. Like, that just sounds fun. So many step backs. So many.
Endless just one-on-one basketball.
Trade for J.R. Smith.
Oh my god.
Get Nick Young in here.
Nick Young's a free agent. He could go back. One time playoff
great. Just have the all gunner lineup. I'm so down for this.
This brings us to our headline of the day from CBS Sports. NBA trade rumors. Rockets have sights set on Paul George after landing Chris Paul. Is this at all realistic in your mind?
Yeah. I think I could totally see it happening. In my five things to know about the Chris Paul trading for Rockets article I wrote, I mentioned that there's a real possibility where Chris Paul could leave. If, like, let's say this all is a disaster and he just ends up being a one-year rental going, you know what, this is a bad idea. I already passed on money to do this. I'm going to pass on even more money to go somewhere where I feel like I compete. Cause I think, I read somewhere that LeBron, Anthony, and Wade are all going to be unrestricted free agents in 2018 along with Paul. So maybe he wants to go bring the banana boat crew together.
Oh my God.
That's a possibility. So I could totally see the Rockets being like, you know what? Yeah, let's go all in on this 1 year rental. We got George, we got Paul, we got Harden. We're going to go all in on 1 year. Boom or bust. Let's try and win a title this year. Knock off the Warriors. Like, so yeah, I could totally see them going all in on Paul George.
The Pacers are like the secret winners of this, right? Because like a few weeks ago, we were talking about
how they were dead in the water. Yeah,
like they had no leverage. And now there is officially this bidding war where you have the Rockets, you have the Lakers, you have the Celtics. I read Sam Amick's piece for USA Today. He mentioned the Spurs as another place that Paul George would be interested in staying if they were to acquire him. I don't know how realistic that is, but you at least have a few teams vying for him right now. And I don't know if the Rockets package, which would have to be centered around Eric Gordon, maybe there's a way to include Ryan Anderson in it too. I don't know. I don't know if that's enough, especially considering they just gave up their 2018 first round pick, so they'd have to trade their 2021, I believe. So I think it would be tough, but I at least understand the appeal. I mean, if you're Paul George, and you're comparing these different teams, like, to go and spend the next few years of your career next to James Harden and Paul and Chris Paul, like, if you look at the teams that he's been on, like, he's been on some good Pacers teams, but even those teams, like, the offense was not pretty. Like, they did not have a bunch of different guys who could play make. And with this level of talent around him, it's sort of like what you need to realistically compete for a title in today's NBA, and I could see that being really appealing for him. So I totally get it from Houston's perspective. I would even get it from Paul George's perspective. My question is just whether Houston can trump everybody else's offers, because they gave up so many assets in this Chris Paul deal that I'm not sure if there's a trade that makes sense for Paul George now. Like, do you have to include Capella? Maybe. And they just got rid of Harrell. So who's playing center then? And maybe that's just a good problem to have. You figure that out later. You have, essentially your own super team if you pull it off. But those are just questions I have about, like, the logistics of pulling this thing off.
Right. If you're going to go into logistics, then it's definitely a lot harder. I think you'd have to probably, Indiana would probably want deals that are close to expiring or young guys, right?
I would think so.
So you'd probably have to throw in Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella if they really wanted them.
Yeah.
They wouldn't take, they would not take, where is it? Eric Gordon, because he's on a new contract, I think. I don't think they want him. So yeah, the logistics are weird because they've gotten rid of all their young, they just traded for a bunch of young guys for cash, but all those are non-expiring deals that they're just trying to make the Chris Paul trade work.
Right.
I guess if there's a contract that Indiana really didn't want, like, let's say they take Paul George and then they're like, okay, and we'll also take Al Jefferson and Jeff Teague. Like, you know, if they can find a way,
well,
or they can get
a
13.
Teague's gonna be a free agent. Like, Teague is.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
He already could be at the door. But yeah, Jefferson's a possibility.
I'm just thinking like bad Monte Ellis. Just thinking like bad contracts right. They would have won.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be really cool if they pulled it off. I don't know. Like, if the Celtics are really in this game, then I don't know that Houston really has a chance. And that's where it also gets complicated, because the Celtics, if we're to believe the reports that have come out, their whole big plan, their master plan, is to get Gordon Hayward to agree to a contract first. And then you officially sign him. And then after that, you execute the Paul George trade. So there's
a
world.
Why is it Dr. Hayward?
Well, I mean, they'd have to clear so much salary to be able to do it. Maybe.
Yeah.
I think if they got the feeling that Hayward was seriously interested in them, then I'm sure they would love to have him.
Or
I mean, I don't know.
It's just weird that, cause they're gonna have to do a lot to get Paul George, and that one might even be harder, to be honest. I feel
But, I mean, the Paul George, like, at the end of the day, that's still just a trade. That's not dumping a bunch of contracts on separate teams and then making a signing. I mean, both would be hard though.
Right, so I'm just saying that because, like, both deals are incredibly hard, I find it weird that Hayward's never once been even, like, linked to Houston, who I feel like in that system he'd be incredible.
Well, especially because the Rockets have been linked to literally everybody else. In terms of
also
players,
that, like, Houston's just like, oh, are you a star? We want you.
Could you imagine if they got Blake too?
Run it back! Run it back with James Harden. Just give a big ol' F you to DeAndre Jordan. We locked you in your house, made you resign with LA, then we dished you.
I mean, that has to feel so bad.
Oh, he's going to be a little angry. He's going to be a little angry, to be honest.
I love Patrick Beverley, but he's not the same lob thrower or pick and roll player that Chris Paul is, to put it kindly.
If Blake Griffin doesn't resign, DeAndre Jordan's got to get traded like immediately, right?
Yeah. I mean, the weird thing was there were already reports around the draft that they were dangling him and trying to see what his value was and maybe even putting him on the block. So I think anything could happen with the Clippers this summer. Like everything is on the table, except apparently for keeping JJ Redick, because Brian Windhorst said on TV that he is just gone. But all the rumors have been putting him in Brooklyn or Philadelphia anyway, so that wasn't particularly surprising. All right, I think we can move on to the second enormous news bombshell of the day.
Jeremy Sessions finally get waived?
What did you say? I just talked over you.
Jeremy Sessions finally get waived?
I haven't seen that yet. So yes, Zen is dead. The triangle is dead. Phil Jackson is out, and they are trying to convince us that it was a mutual thing and not that James Dolan just fired him. I do not believe that for a second.
It's not mutual.
But, I mean, wow. What amazing timing. Like, less than a week after the draft, 3 days before free agency, and the president of the team is out. The Cavs and the Knicks are officially without leadership. I don't know what this means yet for Carmelo, because I think we all assume this means it'll make it far more likely that he stays with the organization. But then I'm watching television, and Stephen A. Smith, is all he's talking about is Carmelo could go to Houston now. Carmelo could go to Houston now, which I have no idea if that's a real possibility or not.
That one feels even less likely than Paul George.
It's a weird one, right? But I mean, look. I can't slam Dolan for this, and like, I don't care personally that he has to pay Jackson $24 million to not run the team for the next 2 years. Like, that's fine, he's got a lot of money. But even if it's the right move, it's like the worst timing. So I'm really curious to see who they end up like tabbing to run this team next, whether it's like somebody within the organization or whether they can go out and get somebody. Apparently they're going to try to poach Masai Ujiri from the Raptors. I'd be shocked if that happened. I'm thinking, why not go out and get David Griffin, but I don't know if he wants this job. And it seems like while it is definitely good for the players that are on the roster, they won't have to run the triangle anymore. I just have no idea where this team is going. What's your take?
When it happened, my thought was, well, yeah, of course that happened. But then I went, wait, free agency is just so close. Is this really a good idea? But I really think that it was probably the right move, because do you really want Phil Jackson to have another summer after what he just did? Like, what he just gave, the contract he gave Joakim Noah after trading for Derrick Rose, like, I don't think you want to give him another summer at this point, especially when he's feuding with your two best players.
Yeah.
Like, openly. Like, he's trying to trade Porzingis, he's openly feuding with Carmelo Anthony, then when Anthony came to him for a bio, he said no, because apparently they only want to trade him. It's like, so yeah, it's the right move, it's just, it's created, I can't even blame Dolan, like you said, because this is all Phil Jackson's fault. Like, he created this awful scenario where Dolan had to be like, okay, we have to fire you 3 days before free agency and enter free agency without a GM with the entire league laughing at us. Like, the entire league is basically pointing and laughing at the Knicks again.
I will say, I think in terms of like players around the league, I think they will see this as the Knicks taking a step in the right direction, because I think just in terms of Phil Jackson's reputation for how he treats star players, how he treats players, how in touch he is with today's game, I don't think it could have been much worse. So this could be the first step on them regaining relevance. Like, I think we could look at this as a great positive turning point for them at some point. But right now, I mean, they just drafted Frank Ntilikina ostensibly, at least partially, because he fits the triangle offense, right? Like, that was the reasoning for taking him instead of a guy like Dennis Smith. Maybe if somebody else who was not Phil Jackson was running the front office and was just drafting on pure talent, they would have taken Malik Monk. Like, they let Phil, after a disastrous season, run the team through the draft, run the team in terms of free agency preparation, and then right before free agency starts, he's gone. And now I see reports like, oh, well, the Knicks might be interested in Jeff Teague now. And like, yeah, okay, that's a signal that they won't run the triangle, because he doesn't make any sense in the triangle. But is like veteran point guard Jeff Teague really what this team needs when you just drafted a young guy and you're not going to be contending in the next couple of years? Like, I don't know. That doesn't seem great to me. So like, to me, they need new leadership and they need it fast. But the problem is like finding a new person to run your team generally, like, should be a long, arduous, like, process where you sort through different candidates. It's not something that you try to do in 3 days. And then once a new person is in, formulating a short and long-term plan for the franchise is also not something you do in 2 and 3 days. And like the whole thing that's going unsaid here is that we're saying free agency starts in 3 days. In reality,
it's been going on since the season ended.
Yes. I mean, this Chris Paul trade just happened. Like, Chris Paul's free agency is over. It's not like he wasn't thinking about where he's going to go. It's not like all of the other free agents on the market haven't been thinking and having discussions with agents, and the agents haven't been having discussions through intermediaries with teams. Like, all this stuff has been happening. And now the Knicks are kind of rudderless. And like, yeah, teams can call Steve Mills and they can negotiate things with him, but how is he supposed to make deals in good conscience without knowing who the next person in charge, like what their philosophy will be or what their goals are? So like, once again, horrible timing, doesn't make sense, but hey, at least they won't be running the triangle anymore. Like I really think that players will look at New York differently now that they don't associate it with Phil Jackson on the triangle.
I have this awful feeling that the whole reason that they fired Phil was because of his awful personality with Anthony, was it because of the triangle, was it because of the bad contracts, or was it because of the draft and then continuing to try to trade Porzingis after the draft. It was because when the buyout deal came out, I feel like James Dolan really saw that and went, no, I can't lose my star player, you're going away.
I mean, that there was a report, I think from Ramona Shelburne of ESPN, saying the talks accelerated when the buyout talks stalled, and when it became clear that basically that Phil would like to do a buyout, and I think Dolan didn't. So I think you're onto something.
Gosh. Like, I just think what I really think Knicks need to do is just get rid of everything that's not named Kristaps Porzingis. Like, just, mm-hmm. or Hernan Gomez. Just get rid of it all. Just go away, scorch earth, start over. New front office and everything, but I don't think Dolan's going to let them do that. I don't think Mills is in a position to do that. I think what they're going to end up doing is re-signing Derrick Rose, signing a couple middling veterans, making Courtney Lee cry.
I don't want to watch that team next year. I don't want to watch Derrick Rose at MSG again. Nobody wants that.
No one wants it. Everyone just wants Porzingis to be flourishing, and instead we get this mess.
You know, the funny thing is that, like, aside from the public statements that he would consider Derrick Rose coming back, and aside from the Kristaps thing, which is a huge, like, black mark on Jackson's resume, is how he handled that relationship. But aside from all that, if you can throw that out, then I think after last season, he did finally get to a place where he wanted to do the right thing. I think he wanted to rebuild in earnest and stop chasing veterans for the most part. That's what he talked about at the season-ending press conference. That's why he wanted to move Melo, not just because he differs with him stylistically and doesn't like that he holds a ball. I think part of it was he just came to a conclusion that, like, we can't keep trying to fast-track this thing. We have to build with young players. We have to start kind of repairing the culture here and starting from scratch. And that's, of course, what he should have been doing from the beginning, right? Like, there was
right.
no need
to chase...
Right,
in that case, don't re-sign Melo.
Yes. And even after re-signing Melo, like, that didn't mean, re-signing Melo didn't mean you had to get Derrick Rose, right? It didn't mean you had to pay Joakim Noah all that money either. But those were the moves that Jackson made. And I think he was finally at a place where he was going to rebuild the team, but just so much damage had been done, in terms of the perception of the franchise, in terms of the relationships with the star players, that it didn't make sense to have him around anymore.
And then when he finally had a chance to possibly rebuild, when everyone was like, you know what, maybe Anthony and Jackson should just go separate ways, he probably even could have convinced Dolan of it at some point. Then he proceeded to try getting a feud with Kristaps Porzingis and try to trade him.
Yeah.
And when that happened, it was like, it's over for him. Like, this is your one, like, you're not building a team for now. Your plan for the future has no plan for the future because you just isolated your best young prospect in possibly a decade. And like, it was just, that was when it was over for him. Like, you do, like, when he got removed, it wasn't shocking news. It was more like, oh, I'm surprised that happened as soon as it did news.
Yeah.
Like, Noah was shocked he got fired.
Okay, so I want you to put on your Masai Ujiri hat. You have you have 4 years remaining on your contract with the Raptors. You are entering sort of an off season where the team is at a crossroads again. You have basically full autonomy. Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment donates a ton of money to your charity, Giants in Africa. But the Knicks are calling, and they want you to run the team, and they will write you basically a blank check. Do you consider it?
Nope. I would never, ever work for James Dolan. Ever. Like, we've seen it time and time again. You don't work for, if you work for James Dolan, you are going to fail. Like, he's the problem with the Knicks.
It's crazy. Like, Dolan promised Jackson absolute autonomy, and then he went on the record saying he was definitely going to fulfill the contract. And he basically did get out of Jackson's way, right? Like, he basically let Jackson take all the criticism, make whatever moves he wanted, and it seemed like he was ready to just let him write out the contract no matter how bad it got. And it turns out that Dolan didn't have that much patience, that they decided to go in a different direction, but, like, weirdly, I'm not sure that makes it seem like a more attractive place for executives. Like, yeah, Jackson got to do what he wanted for 3 years. But Dolan basically hid in the shadows when the team was receiving criticism, and then he went back on his word when he said that he was going to finish out the contract. So, look, Tim Leiwicki is going to lead this search for new leadership, apparently. He already has a relationship with Masai Ujiri. They work together in Toronto. He's actually the guy that was leading MLSE's search who hired Ujiri away from Denver. So he's going to try to do that again, it sounds like. But it's just such a different situation in terms of ownership, in terms of pressure, and...
In terms of roster construction.
That,
like,
too.
If Ujiri goes to New York, it's not just, like, coming in with a blank slate. Like, when he went to Toronto, he kind of had a blank slate in the sense that all he really had to do was get rid of Rudy Gay, and then he fell into Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan working together really well, so he was able to adjust on the fly. There isn't really a situation like that for him in New York. Like, he has the Noah contract. He has Courtney Lee's contract.
He did trade Carmelo once before.
He just really doesn't like him. He really wants to take the deal so he can trade him again.
If the job is to find a person who is good at trading Carmelo Anthony, there's only one man for the job.
It's Masai Ujiri.
Yes.
And he's going to swindle. He's going to find a way to swindle the Knicks in the process of it. He trades him for, like, peanuts and then immediately resigns.
Goes back to Toronto. Yeah.
Had to do it one last time.
So yeah, it's weird, but I'm with you. Like, I think obviously being the man in New York and getting another enormous raise would be appealing to anybody, but he has a really sweet situation in Toronto. And I think he's built up so much equity with ownership and also with the fan base that he could do essentially whatever he wanted to the roster this summer and he'd still be sitting pretty. Like, if Lowry walks, and he trades DeRozan and trades Valanciunas and says, we're starting this over. Like, there are GMs and team presidents that would be hated for doing a similar thing. He wouldn't be. People would just be like, okay, build your own team now. That this wasn't really your team in the first place. You inherited most of these guys. And I don't think that's plan A by any means. But if it comes to that, he'll do it and he'll be okay. And he'll have a long leash and he'll have more job security than 95% of the high-ranking executives in the NBA. So, to me, that is still a better situation than being in New York, and it's an easier situation, too.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and while ownership will probably let him, would that really be good for the Raptors? Like, have the Raptors reached a point now to where they've earned enough an identity to where they can be bad and rebuild, and they're not going to lose, like, the interest of the fans? Because I know that used to be, like, a huge issue, like, with the Raptors for a long time. It's like, they can't afford to be bad for a long time because then no one's going to care about them. And they're going to go the way Vancouver went a long time ago.
It'll never get to that point again. They have enough hardcore fans that really care. There's enough of basketball culture now to support the team. Like, that's not an issue. I think the issue would be, like, they have by way of having their best stretch in franchise history over the past few years. They have an identity. They have a culture that they've built. They stand for something. And a whole lot of that has been the fact that Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and honestly, Dwayne Casey have been there together the whole time. And if they throw all that out, then to a certain extent, they're like starting over. And while people will still care about the team, some of the bandwagon fans will certainly stop paying attention, just like what happens when any team goes into a rebuilding process. But I think the difference is that everybody trusts the guy that's in charge now. Where that and that has really only been the case a couple of times in Raptors franchise history.
Right. I was just curious because I know the whole thing about Vince Carter was, oh, he saved the franchise. And then if I remember correctly, no one really appreciated Chris Bosh as much as we really think they should have. And it was kind of like, I've never really felt like the Raptors had the national identity they do now until Lowry, DeRozan, and Casey came along. And I feel like getting rid of that would be a negative for the franchise as a whole, because then at that point, you're getting rid of kind of what made you the national team that you are now,
right,
compared to what they were.
Yeah, that's why it's not plan A. Like, they would like to keep it together. They would like to keep Lowry. They would like to keep competing and being good. And you're right. I mean, the Bosch thing, that was an interesting time. They never got over the hump with him. There was a time where he was very popular, but it wasn't ever to the extent that, like, Vince Carter was popular in Toronto. And I mean, even around the league, like, Vince Carter was the number one vote getter in the All-Star game every year. And Bosch was never at that point. Yeah, I think there, when we talk about good teams potentially tearing it down, there's always a cost. And it's not going to be easy for the Raptors to go that route if they end up going that route. And I think they'd vastly prefer to sign Lowry to a deal that doesn't completely hamstring them and then go forward from there. But that's enough about Toronto.
They can probably have a better chance of keeping Lowry now, though, right? Because the Rockets just traded for Chris Paul. And wasn't the Houston like the big team everyone's connecting Lowry to?
Absolutely. I mean, the Raptors are a winner in all this. I think the suitors for him, I mean, who is left? San Antonio is the only one that makes sense to me.
Yeah, because Philadelphia drafted Fultz, Houston just traded for Chris Paul, so unless San Antonio really wants him, which I don't know if he wants there.
I mean, I think that'd be a great fit, but I also know that they have to clear salary if they're going to do that. And I'm not sure that happened. Like, maybe Minnesota's an option, if they dump Rubio. But I don't know that that's a better or more appealing destination than Toronto is for Lowry.
Right, because he gets to play with DeRozan.
Yeah, and this is a crazy thing. Like, every time one of these big trades goes down, it shifts the way, like, five other teams are thinking. Like, just this one Rockets-Clippers deal, that has implications for the Raptors, that has implications for the Spurs, that has implications, of course, for the Lakers, the Celtics, the Pacers, all of these teams. Like, it's affecting multiple other stars, free agencies in that market, and the trade market for guys, too. It's crazy.
It's why whenever we have the trade deadline, we're always like, okay, that one big name needs to get traded so all the dominoes can fall.
Yep, exactly. Okay, quote of the day. I have two quotes of the day. And they are both from social media, which is a little weird. One is a comment from Celtics star Isaiah Thomas, who went to Slam Online's Instagram account, Slam Magazine, and there was a post there about the end of the Lob City, basically. And his comment was, "Hell of a run. Now, Blake, come on over to Boston, LOL."
Crewing! He's crewing!
This is the stuff we have to cover now. The NBA is so weird.
I think someone posted that Porzingis is cool with the Phil Jackson move because he followed the new draft pick on Instagram, and then he immediately liked like two of his pictures.
Yeah, he's all in now, obviously. But I love Isaiah getting into recruiting mode. He has not been shy about this kind of stuff in the past, like last year with Durant as well. Blake in Boston, we already know, is essentially their backup plan. It was a pretty good backup plan, as if they don't get Gordon Hayward, to try to get Blake Griffin and then try to get Paul George. So their starting lineup presumably would be Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Paul George, Blake Griffin, and Al Horford next year, which wouldn't be bad.
Not at all. And I feel like Blake Griffin would make up for the rebounding issues. I was seeing on Twitter today that Griffin's not as much of a rebounder as he used to be, which that could be an issue, but I feel like from what we know of him, like he'd be able to rebound and make up for Al Horford's lack of rebounding.
Potentially. I think he'd help. I mean, part of that is role, right? Like, he used to not operate on the perimeter at all.
Yeah, he used to be exclusively by the basket.
Yeah. So when the Clippers moved him away, of course his rebounding numbers were going to go down. Any other thoughts on Isaiah's Instagram comment?
I just love that this is like the new offseason thing. It's like we have to like scour Instagram to make sure to follow the latest recruiting news. It's like college sports, but now it's the NBA.
It really is. Okay, so the second one comes from a YouTube comment section, which ordinarily I would advise everybody to ignore at all costs.
All costs.
Kevin Durant commenting on YouTube, which is a very weird place to make a public statement when you have like a huge following on Twitter, on Instagram, when you showed recently you're capable of taking a full page ad in the paper. But you're going with YouTube comment section. Okay. So here's the quote. This is only part of it. It was a really long comment. But the part that everybody latched onto was, huge congrats to Russell Westbrook on MVP. That boy went out there and was a created player on 2K all year. Effing balled out. Gotta respect it. In the course of the same post, he also congratulated Malcolm Brogdon, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Mike D'Antoni, and I quote, my boy James Harden. So, the Durant-Westbrook feud officially over?
I feel like this is even more insulting than leaving. Make them in a YouTube comment? That's like going into the middle of like a crowded building or a crowded room and like yelling out thanks, making sure that they can't really hear you though. Like, he wanted to like have evidence that he was like congratulating Russell Westbrook, but at the same time he really didn't want people to know about it. So he did it in a YouTube comment section, which probably immediately got filled with gay slurs and racist and racist rhetoric, because that's what YouTube comments are known for.
This is true. I would argue though that Kevin Durant is a smart enough man to know he says something anywhere, people are going to find it. And that's exactly what happened.
But why a YouTube comment then?
I have no idea. It is so funny and so weird. Like, he could have made a YouTube video. He's been making a lot of videos lately. Like, he could have filmed something where he just like congratulates him on camera and congratulates everybody else too. But I mean, I guess there's the character limit on Twitter. He didn't want to deal with that. Maybe that was why.
He didn't want to do like the whole phone screenshot thing where you write it in your notes page and then just take a screenshot and post it on Twitter.
I guess that was too much for him. I don't know. I thought he was more tech savvy than that.
I don't know. Maybe he has a deal with Google. I mean, Google's in California.
Wow, this is really going deep now. We didn't know how far this stretches.
We gotta figure this out. I need to know why you chose a YouTube comment of all things.
So we can end the show with this. We have Durant talking about the awards. Did you think the NBA awards lived up to your admittedly very low expectations?
Yeah, they were fine. They weren't fun, but they were fine. Like, the high points were good. I enjoyed Russell Westbrook's speech. Monty Williams' speech was incredible.
Bill Russell
stole the show.
It was amazing.
That was the best part. That made the whole thing worth it, because if we just had to have like a daily video, YouTube video that Kevin Durant can comment on, if we're just having a daily YouTube video that Kevin Durant can comment on, where Bill Russell just says whoever's ass he can kick, like, I am totally okay with that. Like, I want this every day. Like, Bill Russell's daily ass kicking. That's what we could call it.
Hell yes. I would say we were correct in predicting that it would be professional and not amateur hour, and that it would look good and it'd be presented well. And all of that was true. I think it was a success for the league. Was it entertaining? Eh, kinda. Like, there were parts that I really liked, and they're basically the parts you mentioned. But I'm not a big award show guy, and I thought it was a bad look that LeBron and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant all skipped it. Those are the best three players.
Right, that was the big thing to me about it, though, is like, it was this big event, but the only people that really showed up were Russell Westbrook's teammates. and Draymond Green.
And, well, most people who were nominated for awards were there, right? Like, I mean, Giannis was in people. Greece, but most people were there to accept their awards.
Well, right, but if you only have the people, I mean, I guess that's kind of normal for award shows. Only the people getting it are showing up, but...
No, but even the nominees, like, for the most part, they were there. Not everybody. Not everybody. But
I would have preferred, decent turnout. I would have preferred if it was a little shorter, personally, because... Just some of the
I
stuff
would say that about
very...
every award show.
Just some of the stuff that was very obviously there to fill time was not good.
Yeah.
Drake's consolation interviews were awful. Like, he said, at one point, that weird moment he had with Draymond Green that was really awkward, he was like, Draymond ruined the joke. I was like, no, Draymond tried to say whatever awful joke you were saying, man.
That was awkward, though. That was a very strange little situation there, which is weird, because, like, I thought Drake and Draymond, like, were friends, so you'd think it would work better.
I think that's what Drake was thinking, and Draymond just had no idea what he was going for. The one with Harden was the worst.
Oh, my God.
Harden clearly had no idea what he was going to ask him. He was like, what are you asking me right now, dude?
Drake handled it well, though, and he was just like, okay, thanks.
Oh, just no more consolation interviews. So if they can reduce that by 30 minutes, honestly, I'd prefer if they reduced it by an hour, but that's not going to happen. If they reduced it by 30 minutes...
Like, I think if they reduced it by 30 minutes, it would actually end on time. Because it went over.
Oh, right, it did. If they can reduce it to an hour and a half, like, and really streamline it, like, just cut out a lot of the fluff that was really unnecessary...
Honestly, just give me a 10-minute highlight video of what happened, the best speeches, the winners, and then I'll watch it and Kevin Durant can comment on it.
Yeah, Kevin Durant will leave his long comment on it. And Bill, and at least 5 minutes of that will be Bill Russell naming off people whose ass he can kick.
Yes, please. More of that next year, we hope.
I really want Bill Russell to just... I really want him to take that and run with it. He won't, but I really wish he would.
All right, that'll do it for today's CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm James Herbert. Thanks so very much to Chris Barnwall. Matt Moore will be back next week. We will be back on Friday when the league will assuredly look completely different than it does now. Thanks for listening.